going on, guys? Welcome back to the Born or Made podcast. Today, I've got a guest on the show who has created a brand that is celebrated by so many fucking people. So many people. I'm sure you've heard of it. Brand is called Mad Happy. It is an apparel brand, a clothing brand that is really based around the mission of the brand is mental health awareness. And they've done such a cool job of making this brand attractive and sort of really disrupting the conversation on mental health, more so than any other brand I've ever seen, actually, because it's a super fun, super like engaging in all the right ways brand around a topic that could be very sensitive. And so I think the guys over at Mad Happy have done such an amazing job. I have one of the co-founders here today. His name is Mason Spector. He's got an incredible story. He and I have a lot in common, and I can't wait to get the combo going. So Mason, welcome to the Born and Made pod.
Thank you, Michael. That was an awesome intro, and it's always nice to hear how people kind of respond to our brand and a lot of what we're doing and the relationship that they're able to build with it themselves. So it's always reassuring to kind of hear that people are receiving the message the way that we're putting out.
Yeah, you know, the coolest thing about it for me was that when I learned about Mad Happy, it had to have been about a year ago or so. And I want to get that story from you, of course. But I just loved everything that you guys were doing and didn't know that there was a mental health backbone. And when I found out about the mental health component and the sort of overwhelming positivity, optimistic sort of mission that you guys have, I just fell absolutely in love with it. Forgetting about the pandemic, mental health is a real thing. And not enough people tell their story because we all have one. And not enough people, as far as I'm concerned, are paying enough attention to mental health and how the environment that we live in today is unfortunately catastrophic to those who suffer from mental health and those who are on the precipice of suffering with mental health. We're in a world today where accessibility is just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and people get addicted to accessibility and image. And that is just a really dangerous place for people who suffer with mental health. So the way this podcast works is I would love to hear your story. I think human beings love storytelling. And for thousands of years, humans have sat around the fireplace and listened to others tell their story. And so you have a really good one. I would love to hear it from you. And I'll probably stop you a few times along the way. The idea or the sort of motivation to get the story is to try to figure out whether or not you were born with this ability to make moves the way you have, or if you were just made over time.
I mean, I feel like the best place to start is kind of my family of origin, especially when you talk about being born or made. I think that's where we all kind of come from. We're all kind of dealt this deck of cards that's completely out of our control that we're kind of forced to live with, right? We don't get to pick who our parents are or where we grow up. But I was born in a small town in Colorado, and my parents were pretty young. My biological father actually ended up leaving me and my mom when I was maybe 6 months old, before I was even a year old. I don't think he was really ready to be a dad at that time. And I'm not really sure what his other motivations might have been. Me and my moms went back to Michigan, where she grew up, and moved in with my grandmother. So I was really raised by these two Jewish women who were very loving and very maternal and super kind of caretaking of me and always made me feel very safe. When we got back to Michigan, my mom actually started seeing an old family friend that she had grown up with in her community who had also just gotten out of a divorce of his own. And he had two kids in his previous marriage. So they started dating. They fell in love and eventually they got married and I had a dad and it was amazing. And for the rest of the story, I'll refer to this man as my dad, just because I've grown up with him as my dad. Technically he's my stepdad, but I've never used any of those terms or anything. He legally adopted me, and all that fun stuff. So it's the three of us. He gets a job offer in LA to come to Hollywood and work in advertising. So we all moved from Michigan to LA and we're going back to Michigan once a month to visit his two kids from his first marriage. So I now have a brother and sister. It's great. A lot of traveling, but things are going well. Then, unfortunately, and tragically, my dad's first wife passes away from brain cancer in 2002. So at that time, my older two siblings, Matthew and Amanda, left Michigan with their mother and moved to go live with their dad now in LA with me and my mom.
How old are you at this point?
When they passed, or when their mother passed away, it was 2002. So I was 8 years old. I was in second grade. And that's actually the first time that I ever went to therapy, because I was asking my mom a lot of questions about death and what was happening and some of the dynamics. And my maternal grandfather was a psychologist. So my mom kind of grew up in that world. And it was clear to her that this kid is having some feelings. This kid is asking some questions. Like he should be able to talk to someone about it. So that's really where like that bug was instilled in me from that early age. Was like a gift that I got from my mother, that I'm super grateful for, that has led me throughout my whole life to just being very open, very vulnerable, very in tune with my emotions, almost to a fault, and even like psychoanalyzing myself. Like I always feel like I'm like my own therapist, and I'm always like outside of my body, looking at myself, analyzing myself. So that's kind of been like my blessing and my curse my whole life, but more on that later.
You're 8 years old, and there was a lot of moving parts in your upbringing. I mean, now I'm sure retrospectively you can point to some trauma there or some confusion. At that time, do you remember feeling a certain way? Did you feel like things weren't right?
Yeah, I mean, I have always just felt this feeling of being misunderstood and just feeling different and just feeling like life and the world was just really hard for me, where I didn't see a lot of other people having as hard of a time as I was. And I think that led me to just kind of feeling very isolated. So especially when my brother and sister moved to LA, their mother had just passed away, right? So I think my dad felt insane sadness for them. He had just lost his ex-wife and the mother of his two kids. And I think there was a difference kind of in seeing them and how they were treated and how he felt towards them, and seeing me and how I was treated and how he felt towards me. And I think people feel a lot of things, and I can't speak to being a parent because I'm not there yet, but I definitely kind of took on at that point like a little bit of like a black sheep mentality in the family, and that's kind of how I felt. And then simultaneously as that was going on, my mother and my father had two children of their own in Los Angeles. So I went from kind of being the oldest only child to having some siblings to now being the middle of five. And I think that really kind of cemented how I felt about myself as just kind of this forgotten middle child. But yeah, it was an interesting dynamic because my parents had obviously created such a beautiful blended family. And I'm so grateful for them that we never used any of the terms of half sibling or step sibling or any of these things. These were my brothers and sisters that I grew up with. So being able to have my brother Matthew is only 6 months older than me. So I got to grow up with a twin basically who was my best friend. Growing up, I had a pretty rocky relationship with my dad. I think he was figuring a lot of things out for himself. And unfortunately, I kind of took a lot of that heat and a lot of that blame. Again, like I said, my two older siblings had just lost their mother, and my two younger siblings were kind of a little bit too young. And I was just kind of like this kid in the middle that just kind of took a lot of shit when I might not have deserved it. And I think that led to me feeling really, really shitty about myself and developing deep, deep insecurities and not really feeling safe all the time. To fast forward a little bit to 2010, my parents got a divorce when I was 16 years old. It was the summer of my sophomore year in high school. And my dad actually came out of the closet to all of us. And when that happened, it was a total shock. And it immediately lifted such a massive weight off my shoulders and alleviated so much of the confusion that I was feeling as a young boy, like not understanding like something isn't right with this man. And like something doesn't feel right about the behavior, about some things and all that. And it was a really nice moment for me to like talk to my inner child and like talk to that 10-year-old boy and just be like, it's not your fault. you're enough. And for him to be able to go through that was really powerful. And it totally was able to change our relationship. And we've done a lot of work together there. And I'm super grateful for the relationship that we have now and that we've worked hard to build.
All right, ladies and gents, I want to talk to you about my new business, Creatures of Habit. I don't take any advertising on this podcast. I have launched a new business that means everything to me. Podcast is very important. Creatures of Habit is as important. This is a business that is built around habits, healthy habits, incredibly delicious, convenient, healthy habits. I've launched with a product called The Protagonist. It is a gluten-free, plant-based, 30 grams of protein per serving instant oatmeal. It is an instant oatmeal with 30 grams of plant-based protein, 7,000 IUs of vitamin D3, 300 milligrams of omega-3 fatty acids, probiotic, digestive enzymes, pink Himalayan salt, chia seeds, flax seeds, pumpkin seeds. It's made four different ways. You can make it with just adding hot water. You can make it in a microwave. You can make it an overnight, you know, in the fridge. And you can make a smoothie out of it. The shit's the fucking bomb. It is literally the first thing that I put into my body every single day. And if you guys know me, you know that I care about everything that I put into my body. Literally everything I put into my body, I am conscious of. I'm a health nut, and I wanted to create a product that honestly helped change my life, which is oatmeal. Actually, the first thing I started eating when I went from the darkness to the light was oatmeal. That was the first meal I had every single day. And for the last 17 years, it has been the first thing that I've put into my body on a daily basis. And that's why the business is called Motherfucking Creatures of Habit, because I am the ultimate creature of habit. And being a creature of habit has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. So instant oatmeal, 30 grams of plant-based protein, vitamin D3, omega-3 fatty acids, pink Himalayan salt, probiotic, digestive enzymes. Like, it's so fucking good and it's delicious. Three awesome flavors: vanilla, chocolate, blueberry, banana. Do yourself a favor, go over to Creatures of Habit, that's Creatures with a K, creaturesofhabit.com, and please support my new business. It will help change your life. Eating healthy things that make life easier is just the way to be. You said something that I think is important to talk about. You know, you had the ability to talk to your inner child. You know, that's not something that a lot of people can identify with. And I think that that's a really powerful tool to be able to access. If I think about my personal story, you know, I really haven't been able to figure out how to talk to my inner child. You know, and I've certainly attempted, but is there a technique that you've used to tap into that place, the ability to connect with an inner child and confirm or soothe that inner child about things that have happened in the past that you would like to, in the present day, bury the hatchet on?
It was a difficult process. I can really relate to you on having a hard time trying to connect. For me, it was almost like a kind of these bushes, and on the other side of these bushes was like the little kid sitting there. So like, in order to access him, I kind of had to like whack through all these bushes and like do all this other work of these other traumas that I think like made me dissociate at that time and really remove myself from that kid to be able to access him. So like, for a long time, when I really started going to therapy in my adult years, I couldn't remember things about my childhood. I couldn't remember what I liked or what kind of kid I was or certain family trips, or I had like so few memories. And it's just because I had totally dissociated and just filed all of those away in a cabinet in my brain that I just didn't want to access. And the biggest thing for me in unlocking those was EMDR therapy, which kind of recreates our rapid eye movement when we go to sleep and we're in deep sleep and our REM sleep, where our brain is basically just like filing away all of our experiences from the day and like knowing which file cabinets to go and store them away in. This type of therapy has really changed my life to be able to open some of those cabinets and kind of pull up memories and experiences and traumas that consciously I didn't even know I had that were in there, and like properly file them away and process them so I can put them to bed and kind of unlock those parts of my life that I was unable to access before. So that's kind of like the family of origin story. I feel like that's always an important place to start, just to get a better perspective on kind of the environment and the dynamics growing up. Like I said, I feel like that's instrumental into who we become and why we become and all those things. As far as me on my journey, then I was never someone who felt smart. I always struggled in the classroom. School was never something that kind of fit for me. My older brother, Matt, who was only 6 months older than me, like my twin that I was telling you about, this kid was just like a wizard. Like he was so naturally smart, like the kid that just didn't have to study a lick and would go in and just ace the test. Right. So I definitely started comparing myself to him a lot at a young age, and he kind of went through puberty before me. So he was bigger and stronger, and in sports, he was always a little bit better than me. He was always a little bit smarter than me. So I kind of just didn't really feel like I had my thing. In middle school, I was like, all right, what can be my thing that makes me feel good, that I can own, that I can be better than Matt at, that can kind of be what I champion, that gives me a sense of purpose and identity. And that ended up becoming girls, I think, was something that I was starting to go through puberty and starting to, I got my first phone, right? Like now I'm texting girls, I'm kind of flirting, I'm realizing that girls like me, that they think I'm cute. And this was like really the first high that I ever experienced in my life. And I was like, wow, this is it. This is what I do. This is like going to be my thing. Like, I'm just going to dive head into this. So from that point, I really think those were like the first signs of like my sex and love addiction at a young age, of like, this is making me feel really good. And I want to talk to as many girls as possible and have them all tell me that they think I'm hot and that they want to kiss me. And then that kind of started building in middle school. And then as I went into high school, you start to get a little bit older, you start to get a little bit more sexual experience, like the stakes kind of raise. That's when like drugs and alcohol came into the mix for me. And I started smoking weed every day, and I started drinking on the weekends, and that only kind of amplified everything. As soon as I got into high school too, I got a girlfriend, and that's like a whole another high that was hitting, of like, oh, now someone is saying that they love you. They don't just like you. And that makes you feel really, really good. And I always had a problem with staying faithful. It was always like I was building kind of like this web of girls and like a network of women that I could tap into anytime I was feeling depressed or anytime I was feeling shitty about myself. I wasn't in any kind of therapy at that time. I wasn't doing any work on myself. So this was all just like medicating and distracting and all of these things. After my sophomore year of high school, when my parents got divorced and my dad came out, I was at a real turning point in my life. My grades were really starting to slip. I was going to a private Jewish day school that I wasn't really happy at. Socially, I was going to another school back in the town where we lived, where Matt was going. So like all my friends were here and I was at this school, and it just didn't really feel congruent. And I ultimately made the decision to leave LA and go to somewhat of a therapeutic boarding school in Connecticut for my last 2 years of high school. And I remember being 16 years old and kind of talking to my parents and being like, this isn't something that I want to do, but this is something that I feel like I need to do. And I'm worried that if I don't do this, that I'll never get into college. I won't graduate high school. I kind of need that additional support. And this is kind of something like a trend that happened throughout my life as well. But I kind of got in the habit of like running away when things were hard and not really dealing with my shit. So I think this was an example of me just being like, it's too hard here. I want to go somewhere else, kind of grass is greener mentality, and going away. So I ended up going to that boarding school. It was called Hyde in Connecticut. In hindsight, it was a great experience. I think a lot of the things that they were teaching there in terms of morals and foundation of how we want to live our lives as individuals with integrity and humility, and a lot of these words that they would throw around that I didn't really understand at the time, that now I talk about and kind of preach every day.
I mean, it's pretty incredible that you were able to come to that at 16 years old. At 16 years old, I escaped very similarly to you, except just into the drugs and alcohol. I didn't have the foresight to think through like what a better option could potentially have been.
I was at this school and I would come back to LA for breaks and vacations and things like that. And I almost created this duality of like two different versions of myself, of like when I would come back, it's like, oh, like Matt's brother is back in town, or like Mason is this guy who's out at boarding school, but he's part of the Spectre family. And like, we had that house in high school that looked just like the door was always open every weekend. There were like, we were bringing mattresses in like in front of the couch, and it was just like 10 homies crashing. Like, we were that house all of the time, which I think honestly kind of led me to developing this other secret part of myself, because I grew up with so many people around. So I think that's another reason why these addictions were so appealing to me, because it allowed me to create this little world that nobody else knew about, that I was in full control of, that I was kind of the ruler of, and developed a lot of like shady parts of my personality that I've worked super hard to kind of get rid of. But anyways, after that, I ended up applying to colleges. Obviously, my dream was to go to Michigan. That's where all my family went. Couldn't get in. I ended up going to Indiana University, which my time there only lasted one semester. And I was at the end of my first semester of freshman year, and I was pledging a frat. I had a lot of friends there from LA, older kids back from home that were rushing me. It was so fun. I was meeting a lot of people. I was hanging out with girls. We were partying. It was an absolute blast. We had the number one basketball team in the country. It's like, how could it get any better than this? And I kind of looked around at what the upperclassmen were doing, and I kind of just took a beat, similar to how I did when I was 16 years old, except now I was 18 or 19 years old. And I was just like, something doesn't feel right in here. I don't know what I want to do. I don't want to do this same shit for 4 years. I have no really direction or focus in my studies. My parents are spending all this money to send me here, and I'm just like partying it up and not really focused on academics at all. And then I also had a girlfriend back home in LA that I was still kind of talking to, that like, that was of course making me feel better than anything was at school. So I was like, I want to come back. I don't want to do this anymore. And I think that was another example of me kind of running away. And it's interesting to think about these decisions now, because obviously I ended up in a great place and I love where I'm at, but I'd be lying if I told you that I didn't think about what would happen if I would have stayed at that high school or would have stayed at college and really finished the job. Because I think that's a lot of what I'm working on now, is like following through and ending things that I start and really being committed, even if it gets really fucking hard and you really don't want to do it. But anyways, I came home and my parents set some ground rules for me, obviously, like you're either going to be in school or you're going to be working. So I ended up going to a local community college for a little bit, probably for the next year, but I was totally half-assing it, smoking weed every day, sleeping in as late as I could, driving to school because I drove my friend to school. We'd walk out, then I would go right back in the car and like read a book or like fall asleep or something, like super, super checked out. And I just wasn't feeling fulfilled and I had absolutely no direction. But I kind of always grew up with this creative bone in my body that I think I got from my dad, him being an advertisement and being in love with film and being super creative himself. I remember he would always take me to like art classes at LACMA when I was a kid, and he's an art collector himself. So there was always kind of this world that felt very freeing and non-judgmental and very like self-expressive and all these kind of things. So I hit up a buddy of mine who is one of my partners now, Noah. And I was like, let's just start something. Like, let's just start something in fashion. I don't think either of us were like obsessed with fashion at the time, but we were like stylish kids. And I think fashion, living in LA, was one of the most accessible outlets creatively to kind of do something, right? You go to downtown, cop a white tee, screen print some shit on it. Like, people have to get dressed every day, right? So that's kind of where that started, like getting into the fashion industry. And we started a company before Mad Happy that ultimately ended up failing. But I think we had a little bit of success and we learned a lot. Like, neither of us went to fashion school ever. So we were just like flying by the seat of our pants, just like learning all this shit on the fly. And I think that failure ultimately is like what we owe so much of the Mad Happy success to. So we kind of did that for maybe a year and a half. And then it kind of finally fizzled out. We ran out of money. It was clear that we just didn't know what the hell we were doing. And then I had another period where it was like kind of like probably my second to worst, like rock bottom of my life. And it was just like, holy shit. Like, I shouldn't have dropped out of school. what the hell am I doing? Why did I think I could start a business? I'm not smart. Who are you? Like, what are you going to do with your life? I was probably maybe 20, 21 at the time or something like that, and just had absolutely no direction. I started driving for Postmates at the time just to like have a job and make some money. I was feeling super insecure about not having a degree, not having a resume, not being able to do anything. And I was at a college basketball game for one of my homies who hooped for Pepperdine. And it was his senior year. It was the last game that he had just played. And I was in the parking lot in my car by myself, texting him after the game, congratulating him. And I was like, yo, bro, like, I'm mad happy for you. And I was just like, holy shit. I literally stopped in my car. I put my phone down and I just sat there, and it was like a light bulb went off in my head. And it was really one of those like aha moments. And I was just like, wow, this feels very powerful. This feels very just important, not only for what I was personally going through at the time, like made me feel so much better about my current situation of just like, this is life, man. It's ups and downs and it's everything in between. And it's like, you just kind of got to feel it and let it come and really just ride the wave. But it was also felt very big and universal and like, two words that everyone can relate to in their own way and everyone could connect with in their own way. So it had kind of both that like individual and universal appeal at the same time. And I was like, this is the meaning of life, bro. Like, this is the essence of life. So I whipped home, went down PCH. I immediately called my partner Noah again. And I told him kind of just about that moment that I had and the name. And he fell in love with it immediately, obviously. And we were like, all right, let's give this thing another shot. Let's do it kind of differently. Let's start slow. Let's really be about something. Let's do everything organically. Let's have fun. Let's work with the homies. Let's work with people that we love and kind of start it from there. And then I think once we were kind of figuring out what it was and what we wanted it to be, we were like, we grew up in LA. We grew up on Fairfax and Melrose and Santa Monica, Venice, all these types of places. And everything growing up just felt really kind of exclusive, right? It was like the feeling of you would walk into the store, the employees would kind of look you up and down. They might not even say hi. You're like, Jesus, is my fit terrible? Like I'm such a loser. I have no style, right? Like I remember feeling so bad about myself going into certain stores that I thought were cool. And we were like, why don't we just flip that streetwear narrative like completely on its head and go like bright colors, be ultra inclusive, have like positive messaging. Like that's what Mad Happy means, is like the ups and downs and kind of valuing both sides. We can't have one without the other. So that was kind of the original idea, which like didn't even have this like huge mental health component. The brand took off and grew kind of faster than we could have ever expected. We ended up getting two of our other partners and co-founders involved, Payman and Josh, who really supported us a lot on the business and operation side. Obviously, them both having degrees from business school. So nothing would have been possible without them. You know, I think that was a huge piece that we were missing initially. One thing that we did that I feel like was super beneficial for us was we launched the brand with a pop-up, our first ever pop-up on Robertson. And I think it was at a time where people were really kind of straying away from the physical retail experience. And we were like, no, there's something here. There's something with bringing people together. There's something with that communal energy. Like we really want to build a community. It was around that same time that we came up with the Local Optimist Group and really the belief of optimism and why that was so important. And then also when we kind of molded like the mental health mission and like, this is who we are. This is what we're about. This is the message that we want to spread. In our first 3.5 years of business before the pandemic, we did about 12 or 13 pop-ups all over the country, New York, LA, Miami, Aspen. Like I said, it just took off like a rocket. I think people were really able to resonate with what we were doing and how we were doing it in such a genuine and authentic way. So that was great. And then even with all of that success and kind of finally doing what I thought was what I always wanted to do, I ended up having my biggest rock bottom to date in the summer of 2018. So a little bit over 3 years ago in June of 18, I was in a relationship with a girl who I was madly in love with, had all of my happiness poured into her and all of my self-worth and existence. And I ended up being dishonest with her and she found out and we broke up. And my whole world was turned upside down, right? I really had a broken heart and I didn't want to live anymore. And none of my success with Mad Happy mattered. And I just didn't feel good about myself. I remember telling myself, like, all you do is make everyone's lives harder. You make your own life harder. You made your girlfriend's life harder. You make your partner's lives harder because you don't work hard enough and you're not smart enough. You make your parents' lives harder because they always have to worry about you and you're not as stable as your other siblings. And like a week of kind of telling yourself that leads you to kind of feeling like you don't really want to be here anymore. And there's kind of no point in being here anymore. So I had kind of a moment where I was going through that a lot. I started going to my first 12-step meetings right after that breakup had happened, just to like find some peace. I was going to SLAA meetings, which is Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. And I would rip like 2-3 meetings a day, right? I was like such a mess that like the 1 hour in this room with these strangers just like felt like my family and just like felt like I had peace. And when I was outside of those rooms, I just wanted to get right back into them. So I did that for probably about 5 days. And then I ended up attempting suicide and scared the shit out of myself and had no idea who I was or the ability to recognize myself in any way. I kind of had a moment where I kind of snapped back into my body. I feel like me in that moment with my attempt wasn't who I really was. And when I kind of came to again, I was scared shitless. And I immediately drove to my mom's house and told her what had happened. And we both kind of broke down and she called my dad and he came over. And I remember a moment of all three of us just kind of lying on a bed together, just kind of crying. And I was just like, I need help. Like I need to go get help. So we ended up finding a great treatment facility to send me to in Tennessee. And I was there for, I want to say like 75 days. I ended up getting sober there, doing a lot of the work there, like really starting my journey there that I'm continuing to kind of work towards every day now. I now have over 3 years of sobriety since then. And that kind of was the first time that I ever really did the work all the way through. I think previous times in my life when I had that kind of hiccup in high school, when I had that hiccup in college, I would commit myself, but I would do like 50% of the work or 60% of the work. And I'd be like, I'm feeling pretty good. Like, I think I got this now. And like, I would always regress and always regress. And it was only this time that I was really like, the work's never going to be done. I'm never going to be at 100%, but I can't stop just because I'm feeling good or just because I feel like I haven't had these urges or I haven't acted out in however long.
You said so many things, man. I mean, it's such an inspiring story. And I know that it sort of came to a head with a suicide attempt, which is obviously terrible, but probably something that you couldn't avoid at the time, right? And there's so much, there's a lot of that, unfortunately, now specifically, right? There's a lot of that, but something that I have learned over the years in sobriety, you brought it up a few times where, you know, you're either hearing voices in your head, whether that's like a mental illness or not, but you're telling yourself that you suck, essentially. You're telling yourself that you suck and you're not good enough and you've destroyed this for your mother and father and you can't stay in school because you're not committal and all these things that you tell yourself. And I absolutely identify with that shithead that's telling me those things. But what I've come to the conclusion of over the last probably really 6-7 years, that voice is me. That voice is me. And I perceive that voice, or I used to perceive that voice, as someone else. I've made an agreement with myself that I have to be at a certain level, at a certain stature. These are agreements that I've made with myself for whatever reason. And they're stronger than handshake agreements. They're like life or death agreements, right? Where I'm gonna allow those agreements to either make me feel terrible if I don't fulfill or absolutely incredible once I do fulfill. But there's no middle ground, right? So if I'm not firing on all cylinders, that voice from that agreement that I made, probably from my childhood, creeps up and says, you suck. And someone said to me, probably around that time, around 6 or 7 years ago, because I was really struggling with that voice that was just me, my ego. Someone said to me, Mike, you know, if that voice in your head that you listen to so fucking closely and believe so strongly was another human being, would you hang out with that person? Is that the kind of person that you would want to sit with 24 hours a day? And I was like, no way. And so the guy was like, so then stop hanging out with that guy, because that guy does not exist. You made him up in your head. And so once you can break that agreement with that person that feels the need to be perfect, that fear that you have will quiet down. And I'm telling you, man, like when I was able to delineate the difference between a voice that I created trying to sneak in and drag me down to, hey, dude, if that was another person sitting next to you talking to you like that, you would probably remove yourself or knock him out. When I was able to do, to like stop and pause, and I think also, I mean, we're on the topic of mental health, like mindfulness for me has been such an absolutely integral tool to helping me acknowledge the difference between real and fabricated. And so like when those things happen, because of course, you know, I have a mental illness, man. I am an alcoholic, and you know, even though I haven't drank in years, like I have this thing. And so I'm hypersensitive, and I'm sure you are as well. And I'm super in tune with my emotions, as you said you were as well. You know, I am able to now, because I've incorporated like a mindfulness practice into my life, if those feelings start to come up, I can change, at least attempt to open up my toolbox and pull out this like breath thing that sometimes takes me 30 seconds to just pause and just be like, dude, it is okay. Like, take a few breaths, understand that like everything right now in your space is okay. You're not dying. Nobody's on fire. You know, your wife and kids love you. Like, dude, chill. And sometimes it'll take me 10 minutes of like a full blown meditation. But I just, you know, that moment when you're anxious and you feel it in your chest, or you feel it in the back of your neck, or you feel it, you know, in your gut for some people, that is a pivotal moment for people in this world of the mental health journey, right? Like, if you sink in and just allow the darkness to sort of come around your face, like once it starts to come from back here, you have a chance to be like, whoa, 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 hey, like, no, 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 I'm not afraid. I'm fucking not afraid. Yeah. I'm gonna go. And so I just wanted to say that, because whoever's listening, struggling, because a lot of people are right now, like, I'm sure they can identify with all the stuff that you just said. And I can just say that I've battled with this stuff for years. And, you know, there are an enormous amount of tools that don't cost any money that can help us with this mental health journey.
What you said made me think of a few things. The first is that voice. It's so awesome to hear about your experience of kind of identifying that voice as yourself. I feel like for me, the voice was like perceived judgments that I thought other people had about me, that like I thought was my own voice, but like, this is really your mom or dad talking to you, or this is really a girl talking to you with how you think they feel about you or how they want you to be different. And it was like unlocking where that voice was kind of coming from and like what the root of it was that allowed me to like be able to block it out. And we have a quote here that we use a lot that my mom actually told me once, which is treat yourself like someone you love. And it pretty much to us means like we are our own worst critics, and like the way that we believe in ourselves and kind of talk to ourselves and treat ourselves at times, like, is nowhere near how we would treat a loved one. So it's the ability to give ourselves that self-love and that self-care and some of those mindfulness things that you were talking about, that kind of make it just be like, oh, I got to be more kind to myself, and I got to love myself, and I really have to treat myself the way that I would treat someone that I love. That's been really nice both for me personally and as like a message for our brand. And then the last piece, when you're talking about those feelings, I feel like anyone who is struggling, or the thing that has helped me the most, is just allowing myself to feel them, notice them, and allow them. We have to, when we feel something in our body, like you were saying, our body is always trying to communicate ways that it's feeling to us. And it's when we listen to it and sit down with it and kind of open the door and invite it in, even though that's kind of harder in the moment to do, that's what will really pay dividends for our mental health in the long term. Because if you don't let it in the door, it's basically being like, all right, I'm gonna go over here. I'm not going away, but I'm gonna go over here and kind of get stronger. And the more that you keep not opening the door, it just goes and it grows and it manifests and it builds. And then it's going to come out in a way that is so much bigger and so much more paralyzing than it ever really was in the first place. So I feel like just some small victories that we can have with ourselves every day are just allowing ourselves to feel whatever we feel.
Do you have any tools or habits that you've done on a consistent basis or used on a consistent basis that have helped give you a clear vision, given you the self-love, the optimism, the positivity that you seem to walk with today? Cause I want to know what it was like to come out of that 2018 bottom. But did you acquire any tools or habits that you do regularly?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing for me when I was there and that I continued when I got out was journaling and just getting this stuff out somehow. It could be talking to your dog. It could be writing it down on a piece of paper and then burning it because you never want to see it again. It could be writing a poem. It could be drawing a painting, but just like some way to get how we're feeling out of ourselves and kind of into the world was really huge for me. So that did manifest itself in a lot of different ways. If I didn't feel like I had anyone that I was comfortable telling something to, I would write it down. Or if it was something that I knew someone could relate to and could support me in some way, I would share it with them. And then aside from that, I think just the ability to build a habit of working with professionals. So whether that's being in therapy or support groups or just some way to really build my support system and like set myself up for the best chance of success, right? So I'm like, all right, I know I can't drink alcohol. I know I can't smoke. I know I have to be in therapy. I know I have to journal or do something every day. And like, I'm just going to make myself do all these things and I still might fail. It still might not be enough, but I just have to set myself up for the best chance of success and really build my world with what I want it to look like. So I think that those have been like the biggest things for me. And then just like, you got to let people know who you know care about you and love you, what's going on. Cause like you would be so surprised with how much love and support you get from those people. So now I'm just like, I have no room in my life for bullshit. Or like I had to cut a lot of homies off when I got back who I had been friends with since the jump in LA. And really, like I said, build my world with people who make me feel better, who I know can support me, I don't feel judged by, who allow me to feel like I can be myself. So it's really just that world building through a variety of exercises that I try and focus on now.
All right. So you're coming out of this really dark place after you had this breakup and then Mad Happy is still killing it at this point. What was it like going through that when you have this super successful business?
First and foremost, I'm so grateful for my partners, for the ability to kind of pick up the slack and really allow me to take all the time that I needed to get myself right. I think obviously with what our company stands for and what we're all about, it made a lot of sense. It felt weird transitioning back a little bit just because a lot of my old insecurities were coming up of like, you're not smart enough or you're not a businessman or like, you're not successful, like, and kind of transitioning my way back into things. But it was really nice to kind of have their support. And then once I came back, just to kind of hit the ground running and like pair all of those habits and routines that I was speaking on that I had built the treatment with this like fast paced business startup that we were running, and to just like let those two lives run parallel. It's like, I didn't leave myself a lot of time to like fall into some of my old habits and really have distractions and medicate myself in any way. But it ultimately was like my biggest blessing. And like, I'm so glad that it happened because it allowed me to get to know myself so much better. That really made me more committed to the work we were doing at Mad Happy, feeling better about myself, feeling more secure as myself as a person, being able to take what I went through and channeling that into our business and our mission and everything that we're trying to do. So it was really beautiful in that sense as we continue to open up stores and have panels about mental health and be able to talk to some really cool people and share a bit of my story. And then we ended up launching the year that I got back, The Local Optimist, which is our free mental health resource, where we provide tons of mental health content on there, whether they're toolkits about specific topics or issues or personal stories from people. We really try and use that platform to create as much awareness, provide resources, and really give members of our community a platform to share their own stories. Like we published a ton of stories that are just written by high schoolers or college students who really open up to us about their experience with mental health. And then this last summer, 4 or 5 months ago, being able to start the Mad Happy podcast, which has been amazing and just so eye-opening, both for me personally, but also for us as a brand, to double down on that mission of what we're trying to do and have some awesome people on to share their story, to talk about mental health in ways they've never spoke on it before. And for us to really create as much conversation and awareness as we can on this issue as possible. And we always say, like, we're not professionals and we don't give advice in that way, right? Like, no one in here is a therapist, but through the human experience and just through conversation, we just want to get people to feel more comfortable around the topic. And thinking about the idea of optimism, we feel like mental health for so long has only been looked at on the negative side. And people don't really view mental health on the wide spectrum that it is. And that's a big reason why it's so stigmatized, is because when you think about it, you only think depression, you only think anxiety, you only think suicide. You don't realize that all of those positive emotions and things that we feel too, like, that's mental health. It's all the same feelings. It's all kind of like in our brain. So like, people who think that mental health doesn't affect them, it's like the same way that if you have a body, physical health is a part of your life. If you have a brain, like, mental health is a part of your life. And if you feel, mental health is a part of your life. So like, so much of what we want to do is like, you don't have to be having a shitty day or like be really anxious to be like working on your mental health. It's the same way that like, I might go on a run to try and stay fit, even though I don't feel that out of shape. So it's just that kind of constant upkeep and the ability to allow people to view it on the whole spectrum that it is, kind of makes it more accessible and feel less dark for people who might be scared of it.
Where is Mad Happy now? And for anybody who doesn't know about Mad Happy, can you just give a quick recap of what you guys do?
Yeah, of course. Like Mike mentioned, we are an optimistic lifestyle label, we call ourselves, making apparel right now, really with the mission of creating conversation around mental health and really using our product, kind of like our baseline goal is like to make people feel good and make people feel good about themselves and make people really understand this whole perspective of life, that there are inevitable struggles and challenges that everybody will face, regardless of how wealthy you are or wherever you live or anything like that. You are going to go through hard times. And when you do go through them, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It is completely normal. It is a part of the human existence. And we really believe that those hard times are equally as valuable as those happier moments, because without one of them, the other wouldn't even be possible. So that's really been our mission. And then I think a big part of what we've tried to do is really engage with our community in a really meaningful way, both online and offline. So on the online perspective, outside from our Instagram page and just other ways that we communicate with people, having a resource like The Local Optimist for people to come to. And then online, we've really believed since we started the brand in the physical experience, in the power of community, and just that energy that we can harness in person that just can't be replicated through a screen, and really creating stores that are super inclusive, are super inviting, always have some sort of like mental health activation in the store for people to experience that's completely free, where we're not selling anything And then also hosting a ton of in-person activations and different programming at the stores, whether it's an event or to raise money for charity or a panel on mental health where you can come and kind of hear people share their experience. And then really creating this group of local optimists. And really, we believe in the power of optimism. I think there's so much in life that we can't control and that's out of our control and that we might not agree with. And one thing that we've found that we really can control is our attitude and how we choose to approach and tackle every day. And then we really believe in seeing the glass half full and power that optimism can bring. So we really try and have people feel like they're a part of our local optimist group without even having to buy product, but just by following the brand and following local optimist and really buying into some of what we're saying. And hopefully that inspires them to take their mental health more seriously and share it with a friend who inspires them. And we really believe that what we're doing has the potential to make the world a better place and a more optimistic place at that.
There's an amazing mission behind it, but actually the fits are off the chart.
Thank you, bro.
And it's really cool stuff. But I just think that the mission just makes the brand. It makes the brand for me. And it literally just listening to you describe it just put a huge smile on my whole body. Because I just know how important it is, man. How important it is, you know, and especially the younger generation too, right? Like they're walking into a world where judgment is everywhere, man. It's everywhere. You cannot escape. And so being able to really be in love with yourself and not in a selfish way, but really, really cast that light on yourself and like the feeling of walking outside in the morning and letting the sun hit you. If you can carry that with you throughout the day, that amazing feeling of like summertime, walking out in the morning, sun hitting you on your bare skin, like boom, that fucking dope feeling. So you guys are doing that. You're doing that all day, every day. And I love it, man. I can't thank you enough for being on the podcast. I got to finish with this, dude. Mason Spector, do you believe you were born or made?
I'm a born guy, man. Just how spiritual I feel and things that I've learned about generational traumas and my grandfather, who I never met, being a psychologist that put kind of this mental health bug in my mom that found its way into me. I believe everything happens for a reason, and I believe that I was born.
What a great conversation with Mason from Mad Happy. I love that brand. I think the brand is so awesome. Not only are the hoodies and the sweatpants and the tees and all the stuff that they do really dope, but their mission is fucking phenomenal. And I love the vulnerability that Mason came to the podcast with today. He was not afraid to tell his story in a really intimate way. It's a freeing experience to sit with somebody who's super successful, who has something so awesome going on in the world today, and just really not hold back or pull his punches when he's telling his truth. So I empower everybody after listening to this podcast, A, to share this with friends and family or anyone who you think might want to listen to it, but also take a moment to think about potentially sharing your story. Shoot me a DM. Let me know what's going on with you. The ability to connect with others, the human connectivity, the human engagement opportunity in life is so underrated. We don't think that just sharing a little bit about ourselves could potentially open up doors and give us this opportunity of feeling a little bit more freedom. I know I'm getting a little deep on this, but it just is so important to me. Being able to identify with another person and open up about things that have happened in the past or things that are currently happening right now, it's huge. So I love you guys and I appreciate you guys. Please go check out Mad Happy because they're doing some really amazing things. If you would do us a favor, give us a 5-star rating and write a review on anywhere you listen to your podcast. Follow us anywhere you listen to your podcast. It would mean the world. Also, check out creaturesofhabit.com. That's creatures with a K. I'm doing some really cool things with my new business. I've launched this awesome instant oatmeal product that is going to feed you exactly what you need on a daily basis in terms of macronutrients, vitamins, and minerals. Anyways, you guys are the best. I appreciate and love you, and I say that a lot because I fucking mean it. Until the next one, peace!